Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, today we're going to end the show with New York Times and USA best-selling fiction author and listener favorite, Carla Neggers. She joins us again, this time to introduce her new book, hot off the press last week. It's called Keeper's Reach. We'll also talk with a businesswoman, former mayor, and accidental author. I don't know how you can be an accidental author, but we'll find that out. She calls herself a last wife, and her book is called Cinderella Has Cellulite. It's a collection of essays and irreverent musings about the ups and downs of falling in love later in life with a man who's been married multiple times. But first, we're going to take a look at a Conversations Live shortlist. And I was telling Eric before we started today, this is a segment that is inspired by several listener emails, because I often get asked, how come you only do one show a week? And I have to work on Mondays, but there are other ways for us. Why don't we do that right now? If people can't catch us on Monday, they can catch a podcast on conversationslive.net.
That's right.
And also on
1150kknw.com.
There you go.
Just check out the archives.
Yeah, and they're all up there, so you can listen anytime and as many times as you want.
Download them and listen while you're jogging around Green Lake.
That's right. And also, mine go automatically download to iTunes as well. So there's a lot of different ways you can listen to the show. You don't have to be glued to the radio.
That's right.
Or the PC right at noon.
So, although we do love our listeners tune in live.
We
because
do.
We do the show live each week for their benefit. And you never know. Anything can go right or wrong on a live show. So that's part of the beauty of listening live, you know, is that we're walking something of a high wire each week, you know. So there's
well,
that thrill.
I hope they listen because they enjoy the content.
Oh, of course.
Not just to hear our bloopers, because I have enough bloopers going on.
No, but when you watch someone at the circus or whatever, or walk one of those tight ropes, you're not hoping that they fall, but it is, there's a little bit of a thrill there in that, you know, they
it's
could
intense,
at any point, take that spill.
It's actually, for me, I prefer doing live. I do some recorded interviews, but I prefer doing live interviews because the energy is different as well.
Absolutely.
And you never know where things are going to take you. You might think, you know, a show's going to go this way, or an interview's going to go straight and narrow down this path, and it ends up being something totally different.
Sometimes you just have to throw those questions out and go with, you know, the topic that pops up, based on somebody's answer.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes that's the more interesting way to go. So anyway, as I said, this segment was inspired by listener emails asking why we only do one show a week, and how we select great books, how we select our authors, our guests, what books we reject. And, you know, I'll start with that one, because it's not that we reject books per se. It's more that, yes, we are only on 1 hour a week, and so we're very limited in what we can present here. So I always look for great writers. You know, being a writer myself, I want good writers, people who've written books. And I should say here that we don't just interview authors. I mean, often the book is a byproduct of the other stuff that our guests do. They might be medical specialists. Mm-hmm. We have business thought leaders. We have National Geographic explorers and adventurers and photographers and filmmakers.
We've even had farmers on the show.
We've even had farmers on the show, and fishermen, and one lady who lived way up in Alaska, remember?
That's true.
Yeah. And so we have all kinds of people on the show, and typically they've written a book, or there's something going on that's kind of exciting around what they're doing. But we also have, you know, ordinary people on who are living extraordinary lives or doing extraordinary things with their lives. And So we don't just pick authors, as I said, but when I do look for books, you know, we've been doing this a long time now, and I get, oh gosh, hundreds of pitches a week. And so obviously we can't fit those into a one-hour show. And I do prefer a longer conversation with a guest rather than just having them on to promote a product or a book or a service. I like to hear some of their story. And so it's not that we reject them, it's that I really try to look at, you know, what are the guests' creds here? Have we covered this topic before? Is this from a different angle? Is it from an entirely different perspective, maybe a different cultural perspective, a different human experience perspective? And so that's really how I look at things. And as we piece them together, it's what's going to, you know, who's going to work with whom on the show? And I like to try and tell a story when we're interviewing our guests. So, you know, it's who's got good stories to share with us. And there are lots and lots and lots of books that are really good that we just can't get to here on the show. And so once I've selected what I'm shortlisted, I have an inbox, a yes box, a possible box, and a no box. Actually, they're huge, great big bins because we get so many. And the whole of the back room in my studio is just full of books. And so once I've gone through that process, then I look at scheduling. That's the next thing. And oftentimes, you know, people are very busy flying and, you know, we have a lot of people from all over the country, even overseas. And so we then have to fit in with schedules, and schedules don't always work out. So there are a number of reasons why people get selected to come on the show, and a number of reasons why we can't get some people on the show that we'd like to get on. And it's usually just a matter of scheduling, or that I have something that I think works better for us at that particular time. So I wanted to share a couple of books with you that I did have on my shortlist and that are worth checking out, but we just didn't have time to include in our one-hour show. Or where, you know, traveling made things impossible. And, you know, oftentimes when people write a lot of books, they tend to want to promote the one that's out there right now. And, you know, then they're once that's done, they're writing the next one and promoting the next one. And this was true with Sean Acre. I didn't really come across his word. I'd heard his name because I'd interviewed a couple of people from Harvard who worked on the Happiness Project, which was, it is actually Harvard's most popular course. And so Sean Acre wrote, he's a professor there and he was integral to this project at Harvard. He wrote a book called The Happiness Advantage, The Seven Principles of Positive Psychology That Fuel Success and Performance at Work. And I don't know if you remember the Israeli fellow who joined us. I've forgotten his name now. It's Ben Ilt. What is it? He actually works with Sean Acre. But we had him on the show, and he did a great job of talking about happiness and how to look at things. And Sean Acre does the same thing, but from a different perspective. And so he talks about what he calls the Tetris effect, how to retrain our brains to spot patterns of possibility so we can see and seize opportunities wherever we look. He talks about the Zorro circle, how to channel our efforts on small, manageable goals to gain the leverage to gradually conquer bigger and bigger ones. And he talks about social investment, how to reap the dividends of investing in one of the greatest predictors of success and happiness, which, of course, is our social network. And it's really an interesting... one of the things I took away from this book was redirecting the path, the 20-second rule, and he talks about that and how it really just takes 20 seconds if you stop and pause to think about something to change habits. But it's very well worth reading. And as I said, Sean Acre is one of the leading experts on human potential. He was integral, as I said, to the Harvard course on happiness. He's been featured many times in the New York Times, Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, etc. And that's called The Happiness Advantage. We also have, and I have another one. I'm going to give you a couple of nonfiction ones first, and then we'll look at a couple of fiction ones. This was an interesting one by David Gallis. Have you heard of him, Eric?
I haven't.
Well, he's a staff writer for the New York Times and the business blog there. It's called Deal Book. Previously, he was a correspondent for the Financial Times. His work's been in Forbes, the LA Times, and many other publications. He also practiced meditation regularly for over a decade since he studied that technique while he was living in India. He does live in New York City, but he got interested in how meditation is changing business from the inside out. And he wrote a book called Mindful Work. And he went around and did a ton of interviews here. And I was surprised with looking at this book just how many big, big, big companies are incorporating meditation and mindfulness, particularly mindfulness, into their corporate practices and the differences that it's making. Aetna, for example, had put all of their employees through this mindfulness training. Mm. And
now, when you say mindful, as in mindful work, the title, what exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about just being able to concentrate more on a task, or being more relaxed in the work that they do? Or,
well, basically,
what's his definition?
Things that we've talked about on the show before, mm-hmm. about just being in the moment and being aware of situations. And they do talk about meditation. He talks about the science of sitting in the book. He talks about how Aetna, after his employees had gone through mindfulness training, had learned to breathe properly and react properly to situations, or better to situations, so they'd reduce their stress.
Mm-hmm.
And Aetna saw, according to their statistics, they saw a $90 million a year fall in healthcare costs.
Wow.
By introducing that into their company. It was amazing.
And they would know. I mean, they're one of the big insurance companies. So
yeah. And so it was really quite interesting. And this all started because Bertolini is one of the execs at Aetna. Had a skiing accident that he had, and he was really badly beaten up. And one of his doctors recommended that he go on take yoga, and he didn't want to take yoga. He thought yoga was just for girls. And so he said that he took the class, and then he realized he couldn't move the next day. His body was so sore. And he liked the challenge and threw himself into the practice, and one thing led to another. And Aetna ended up saving $90 million a year by putting its employees through mindfulness training. But that book, is called Mindful Work, How Meditation is Changing Business from the Inside Out. And then I have, this is a really cool book. It's called Flirting with French, How a Language Charmed Me, Seduced Me, and Nearly Broke My Heart. And I'm kind of sorry we didn't get to this, because I suspect that the author has a wry sense of humor. He is William Alexander, and he describes himself as more than a Francophile. He wants to be French. There's one small obstacle, though. He doesn't speak French. So in Flirting with French, he sets out to conquer the language he loves, but asks, will it love him back? Well, he literally eats, breathes, and sleeps French, even conjugating verbs in his dreams, he says. He travels to France, where mistranslations sent him bicycling off in all sorts of wrong directions. He nearly drowns in an immersion class in Provence, where faced with the riddle of masculine breasts, feminine beards, and a turkey cutlet of uncertain gender, he starts to wonder whether he should have taken up golf instead of French. He plays hooky from grammar lessons and memory techniques, and reports on the riotous workings of academia in France. And he also, in addition to his musings and his experiences, he looks at the neuroscience behind learning a language. And I want to share this with you because it's really interesting. And then I have to speed up because we have a guest joining us in just a minute. But this was really interesting. He said that baby boomers are forever looking for the fountain of youth. And he said studying French has been like drinking from a mental fountain of youth. He took cognitive scores before he went on his year adventure in France. He took cognitive scores. Word recall, he was in the 40th percentile. After French, he was in the 88th percentile.
Hmm.
Visual memory, he was at 5%.
Pourquoi?
Because what the neuroscience is explained in here.
Okay.
That was why, for those who don't speak French. So after French, his visual memory increased to the 50th percentile. Mm-hmm. And as far as neurocognition index, he was at the 55% percentile, which is average. After a year of French, he was at 84.
So not only can we learn a new language, even if we're a little bit older, we're adults, but it's actually good for our brain to do so.
Yes, it is. And we've taught some time ago. Yeah. So we talked a while ago with a neuroscientist who echoed those thoughts. But this is it's an entertaining book. And he talks about how he rushes into a class one day and says, je suis fini, which of course means I am dead. And what he meant was he was finished with this. So there's lots of little misunderstandings going on in the book. And then real quick, I pulled out a couple of fiction authors for those of you who love fiction. Lisa Chaplin, she's an Australian author. She has written about 20 books under a pseudonym. This one is the first, it's called The Tide Watchers, and it's the first novel that she's written under her own name of Lisa Chaplin. And very quickly, it's the winter of 1803. One woman stands between Napoleon and the fall of Great Britain. And there's a really interesting story behind that. And then this one I included because he is a Seattle native. He doesn't live here anymore. He lives in California. But Glenn Eric Hamilton grew up aboard a sailboat and spent his youth finding trouble, he says, around the marinas and commercial docks and islands of the Pacific Northwest. And he wrote a book called Past Crimes, which is part of his Van Shore series, his novel. J.A. Jantz says that... he's a gifted writer with a sure hand, as much fun to read as Lee Child's Jack Reacher. So I wanted just to share those with you really quickly. All right, so we are going to take a break, and I'm going to be joined by our first guest today, and we're going to find out why Cinderella has cellulite. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Let's see if I guess that... this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun. Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Lewis and Clark would be proud. We're exploring new territory on the air every day right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, I'm joined now by Donna Arp Weitzman. And sorry to burst your bubble here, but she says Cinderella does have cellulite. We're going to find out more about that in just a moment. Donna Arp Weitzman is a wife, mother, and businesswoman. She enjoys writing and a good pair of Manola Blahniks. Who doesn't? And she earned her BSc and MSc in counseling from Midwestern State University and completed the Harvard Business School OPM Management Program. She served as a mayor and leader in local city government and continues to serve the greater Dallas community in a variety of civic and cultural roles. And she also describes herself as an accidental author. Her new book is called Cinderella Has Cellulite and Other Musings from a Last Wife. Donna Arp Weitzman, welcome.
Hi, Vicki. How are you?
I am terrific, and it's good to talk with you today. And, you know, my first question has to be, how the heck can you be an accidental author? It takes a lot to write a book. It doesn't happen accidentally.
Oh, it did for me. the way it happened is I am a last wife, therefore I am a second wife, and I hope I will be the last wife. But after a tumultuous and surprise-laden dating process of 3 years with my new husband. His wife had died 8 years ago, and we dated 3 years, and now we've been married 3 years. It was so up and down and lots of bumpy roads, and so after we got married, about a year after that, I started just writing down some of the things that happened during our dating process, and that's how I became an accidental author, because I had no intention of publishing it, but I started reading a little bits and pieces to my girlfriends, and when we went on a trip to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I started reading it, and they started laughing and said, "You have to write this as a book." And so they started telling me stories, and we put it together as a book, and now it's getting ready for its third printing. So I think there's a lot of women that have had some bumps and bruises along the way.
Well, that's awesome, and I think probably men could learn a few things from this too, because they go through the experience too with women who've been married multiple times. But
well, I'm writing a second book as a follow up, really at the request of many of the men whose wives have bought Cinderella or girlfriends have bought Cinderella at Cellulite, and that's it's called Prince Charming Has a Migraine, and it's from the men's perspective.
Okay. So let's talk about what you mean by last wife. You're not talking about the one before. You're talking about, hey, I want to be the last wife of this man.
Right. I think we all hope, and that's our Cinderella syndrome.
Yes.
We're raised to think we're going to have one husband, and sometimes we have more than one, but I think we always hope, without too many exceptions, that we will be the last wife. Therefore, we might be the first wife, and we still hope we're the last wife, or we might be the fifth wife, but we still hope we're the last wife.
Mm. So how long had you been dating before you met? Your husband's name is Herb, we should
That's
say
right.
that, right?
Mm-hmm. And
you
dated 3 years,
you dated,
off and on.
You dated him 3 years, off and on. But how long had you been on the dating scene before you met
him?
Oh,
I'd been on it 3 years before that.
Okay. So you'd been around the circuit a few times.
Yes, I have.
and you share some of the musings of your girlfriends. I mean, some of these stories you picked up from girlfriends, too.
Absolutely.
So once things... well, you said you dated him for 3 years, Herb, for 3 years. So I'm guessing things were a little tumultuous at times.
a little rocky from time to time, yes. There's so many issues when you're older and later in life and you're dating.
Right. And you were, let me find this little phrase here. You talk about writing your book. You say, I hope you'll be in the moment with me, reading my musings through the clenched jaw and throbbing headaches I suffered. And you will see a woman of 60 who was furious because she was no one's princess.
That's right. That is all absolutely from the truth. In fact, every little chapter, the book has 20 or 21 little chapters, and they're just little short musings, 3 to 5 pages, or more, a little bit more on some of them, because some of them had more to say, but every one of those are true, either from my experience or those of my girlfriends.
Right, right. So I want to talk about something that's a little serious, I think, because many people go through this. And, I've heard somebody like Oprah say this same thing. She's spent her whole life looking for approval and people-pleasing. And you address this in the preface of your book. You say, while you're writing the book, you realize that you've been consistent throughout your entire life. That is, consistently, desperately lurching for approval.
Yes.
You'd never been able to get enough, to the point of being angry when you didn't get it. So talk to us a little bit about that, Donna, and how writing this book hopefully changed some of that for you.
Well, it was very cathartic, but I was a baby daughter, and my brothers were much older than me, and so I went through life pleasing my parents and pleasing my brothers, and it was pretty easily attained. And then I continued that all the way through being a mayor of a city. And, of course, that's great affirmation when you're elected 3 times. So I felt like I was pretty good at pleasing people. And all of a sudden, I start dating my husband, who is a widower. And he tries not to, but I know he's comparing me to his former wife that I never met because she had passed. And so I didn't feel like I got 100% approval all the time, which was very difficult for me because I was a people pleaser.
Right. So do you think, I would think this just on the surface of things, a blanket surface, we're not looking at individual people. Do you think it's harder maybe to date and marry a widower because there's a tendency to idolize the person who's passed, whereas in a divorce, even if they want it, there's always a little bitterness around it somehow.
I think you nailed it, Vicki. What I found is men that I dated who were divorced were quick to maybe compare me favorably because I think when we remember divorce, sometimes we remember the bad times. But when our spouse or our loved one has passed, I think it's human nature to remember the good times. Mm. And so I think there is a difference of dating a widower versus dating men who've been divorced. However, on the good side of that, of dating a widower, is what I found is my husband was a very devoted husband and therefore had not had the tragedies and or the baggage, and I don't like to call it baggage, I call it life experiences, that divorced men and divorced women had had. He just was almost nascent in some of those things.
Mm. And here are some of the things that you faced along those 3 years. Hopefully they stopped when you got married. I'm sure they probably didn't, but...
Well, they faded away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But some of the situations at Mycroft, if he's rich, you're a witch. Dealing with money issues, that's always a big thing later in life because you have different backgrounds, etc. You talk about rings and blings. Is yours smaller or bigger than the exes, and what does that mean? So what were some of the most difficult experiences for you?
In our particular situation, and I think all of these 21 subjects I talk about in the book through a satire manner are important because we all have different experiences and different paths. But for me, it was moving in his house. That was the most difficult. I was living in a high-rise condo, and my husband had been living in the house we're in for 30 years and didn't want to move. And it was a great house and a great location. And so I agreed to move to his house. I had no idea what that does to a woman emotionally when you're moving into another woman's house.
Mm. I can't imagine that either. I think it would be very, very difficult.
Very, yes, very, very difficult because many of his wife's things were still in the house. And actually, there are some that still are.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a friend who married somebody who was divorced, and he'd been divorced many years, but she said every morning when I step out of bed onto the carpet, his wife picked that carpet. She picked mm-hmm. the drapes. She eventually redid the whole home. But
I've been doing for 3 years. But that was difficult because he has two grown daughters.
Yeah.
And so the daughters, of course, remembered their mother's house. And so it's just when you're blending lives at later in life, whether that be in your 40s, 50s, 60s, whenever, I think it just adds elements that are not there when you marry the first time.
Right, right. You say in the book, prepare to be inspected like a mixed breed at Westminster Dog Show by all of his kids.
And believe me, I felt like a mixed breed. I certainly didn't feel like a thoroughbred at that point, that's for sure.
Yeah. So how do you deal with it when somebody says something like, and this is a quote from the book, I don't see what he sees in her, mom is so much classier.
Well, that happens because you're instantly judged. And I think you're compared, of course, to the ex, whether she's, whether she's passed or whether she's alive. And so I think it's just human nature that we compare. And right. That's very difficult. And I felt compared not only by his friends, but by his children's friends and by his coworkers, and so pardon me, allergies today.
It's bad allergy season.
Yeah, but it was just it was something fraught with anxiety.
And so you not only had that to deal with, you had ex-girlfriends to deal with too.
Right.
I mean, do you not at some point just say, hey, that was then, this is now, get on with it?
It's what you want to say, but it's very difficult to say that because you're in a no-win situation. If you say that, then, you kind of look like a jerk. If you don't say that, you're going to be compared anyway. So there's really nothing you can do about it but laugh or maybe cry. But what I tended to do was try to laugh it off, and now I can look back at it and laugh heartily, not as emotionally laden as I was before, but that's why I wrote Cinderella as a book that we can laugh about, because we've all been in those circumstances. And when I'm doing book signings for Cinderella, I just had one this weekend for Cinderella Cellulite, women will come up to me that maybe are the first wife and therefore the last wife and say, oh, I have a friend in this circumstance. Or one of them said her mother was in this circumstance. So I think we've all had friends that have gone through this.
Yes, yes. So I'm curious, what's your husband's role in all of this? Because is it not his responsibility to take care of, of telling people this is my choice and, at some level we're going to help you through it, but you've got to deal with it?
I think we all think that's what's going to happen. And my husband was very supportive under sometimes not such supportive circumstances. But I also think we have to, as women, we have to take the bull by the horns, as they would say in Texas, which is where I'm from, and decide how we're going to deal with it. Because we can't just become Shrieking Violet or really Cinderella waiting for Prince Charming to come along. And that's really how the title came about was, we all want everything to be perfect, and we want our Prince Charming to bring a glass slipper and our feet to fit in it, but I have yet to talk to anyone that's happened in that manner.
Right, and now we know he has migraines too.
Yes.
Or we will when your new book comes out.
I think the men have such a different perspective.
There's a lot of laughter in this book, but you say a lot of times the smiles hid your tears. Give me an example of a really painful situation and how you dealt with that, because I think that can help other people.
Oh, there's so many painful situations that I look back and laugh now, but at the time they were so painful for me. I can almost pick anything, but I'll pick the ring. When we decided to get married, he said, well, you pick what kind of ring you want. And so I went to the same jeweler, because he wanted me to go to the same jeweler that he and his wife had used, and went to the jeweler, and the jeweler said to me, which I had never even considered this, do you want to get one bigger than hers? Of course, he said, if you do, then everybody's going to say you're after his money.
Right.
If you get one smaller than hers, don't you think your friends are going to be a little, critical and say, well, maybe he doesn't love you enough? So that's a no-win situation, and I just fussed over this ring in my head for probably 30 to 45 days.
And so what did you do?
I bought one that wasn't a diamond. But it's a big stone, but it's not a diamond. I didn't want it to be compared to her diamond size.
So what do you want other women to know, and what do you want the men who marry these women to know, marry their last wife to know?
Well, first of all, I wish that we could get rid of the term baggage, and I think I used that earlier because it was descriptive of what I was saying, but I think baggage is life experiences, and sometimes we look at our men and women look at women and say they're scarred and they have baggage. So that's one thing. The other thing is I think it's very important for us to see the realities of what could happen during these courtships and during remarriage, and to see it, to kind of know that it's not all as hurtful as maybe we take it at the time, and
right.
learn to laugh about it because time helps.
Yes.
But I think we're all a little bit of Cinderella's that have cellulite. You know, nothing's ever completely perfect. And maybe, I don't know this for a fact, but maybe that's why divorce rate's so high, is we go in with our eyes not quite wide open.
Right, right. Well, hopefully people will enjoy your book, get a good laugh from it, and learn something along the way, too, because there's many people in that situation dating and later in life. The book book is called Cinderella Has Cellulite and Other Musings from a Last Wife, and my guest, Donna Arp Weitzman.com. Donna Arp Weitzman, and you can find out more about Donna at DonnaArpWeitzman.com. Donna,
yes.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
You are so welcome, Vicki, and hello to Seattle.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, then, please stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be joined by listener favorite, Carla Neggers, and we'll talk about her new book, and it's called Keeper's Reach. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Hey, hey, Cinderella!
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Dr. Doug Yearout and his All Animals Alternative Medicine Clinic in Marysville, we cover the world of animals. This week, September 6th, at Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and Anything Helps Our Animal Friends Sunday. We'll check on our regulars as usual, plus some extras, like what's new with our elephants, Bamboo and Chai in Oklahoma, Homeward Pets Social Event of September, and new stuff from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
You're listening to the refreshingly different Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And joining us now is a listener favorite. I know this because I hear from listeners every time she's on. And Carla Neggers is the New York Times bestselling author of more than 60 novels with translations in 24 languages. Keeper's Reach is her new novel. It's a Sharp and Donovan novel, and it's described as an absorbing, twisting tale of suspense, romance, and fast-paced action. Colin Eggers, welcome.
Oh, it's great to talk with you again.
Well, we're always pleased to have you here, and I was just saying, you have to be one of the most prolific authors out there. You know, it seems like how often are you putting them out right now?
Well, you know, Keeper's Reach is the fifth full-length novel in the Sharp and Donovan, the FBI series, but I also have done an e-novella, and then I have another series, the Swift River Valley series, that comes out, and I've done an e-novella for that, too, and I have a Christmas book. So it's just been last few years, I don't know, it's just I've had so much going on in my personal life with all kinds of things, you know, just life, and then I have all these ideas just percolating, and so I've been very driven to write, and it's been so much fun. But so Sharp and Donovan comes out once a year, and the Swift River Valley series comes out once a year, with a few little things in between.
Yeah, cause I see you've got another book coming out at the end of September, right?
Yes, this is A Knightsbridge Christmas, and it's my first what we call a gift hardcover. It's a little hardcover with absolutely the most adorable image of a covered bridge Christmas on it, and that's part of the Swift River Valley series, which is not as intense as in action and suspense as the Sharp and Donovan series. It's really nice to have both things going on and writing different kinds of books. So I'm having a great time, and I just did a book signing locally on Saturday and talked to readers, and it was so much fun. I had a reader come up. She drove about, I think it was about an hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that, from where she lived, just to be at the signing and to talk books and to meet me, and we talked and everything. And she's going to she and her husband are going to celebrate their 25th anniversary in Ireland because of reading my book. Well, part of the Sharp and Donovan series takes place in Ireland, and we have a little bit of England and in Keeper's Reach, but the FBI agents are based in Boston and they're from Maine. So
yes.
You know, there's a bunch of locales there, but it's centered around Emma Sharp and Colin Donovan.
Well, that's a testament to your writing, because character, the sense of place becomes another character. And for somebody to want to go to Ireland based on reading a novel is, you know, it's a testament to your writing. So let's begin with Keeper's Reach. A lot of excitement going on because there's a big plan for a wedding. But the book opens up in one of my favorite places in the world, which is the Cotswolds in England. Why did you choose the Cotswolds?
Well, I have this art piece, Oliver York, and he's not been caught, but he's been out for the past 10 years stealing art around the world. And he's English, and he has just this really tragic background. He's appeared in a couple of the books, and in Keeper's Reach, he's at his family farm in the Cotswolds, and that's where his grandparents took over raising him when he was 8, after he had witnessed the murder of his parents and was kidnapped and taken and left alone up in a ruin up in Scotland. And so so for me, I was looking around for a place, like, where could he be from? And I, you know, I've been going to London, and so I ended up in the Cotswolds. And, we've been there several times because we just, like you, just love it. It's just so bucolic and beautiful, mm-hmm. and historic. It's those beautiful honeystone villages, and with the rolling hills, and you can just and paths, so you can walk a lot. And it just struck me that for Oliver to have this tragic background and then to be raised in this really beautiful place, and it just what that does with his character. So it just felt right. It was right. I knew it when I was writing the scene. And then we also have this intelligence analyst, Naomi McBride, who ends up in the Cotswolds. And I could see her. I stayed at this cute little, one of those cute little inns there in the Cotswolds.
Yeah,
and was awakened by chickens myself. And so I have Naomi waking up. I mean, just that image of her waking up to chickens and roosters in here, and here she is, they're in the Cotswolds looking for this art thief, concerned about a rogue FBI agent, going to meet, you know, Mike Donovan, who is Colin's brother, and they have a history, and just all these pieces coming together in her life, and there she is waking up to her chickens in the Cotswolds.
Well, I read that you and your husband took several trips over the past couple of years to research that, so you know, that's a fun part of your job, I would think. Did you learn anything during your research that really astounded you or took you back?
There was so much, because at Cotswolds, the history there. We went to a place there where they had the original sheep, the breed of sheep,
right,
that the Cotswolds got built up around the sheep industry in the Middle Ages. And just that sense of time and how long ago that was. And I just was completely fascinated by sheep. we walk around, you know, on those, because we, my husband and I love to walk. We just go out and, you know, we have a map, but we often do take a wrong turn just because, you know, we do. We get caught up in the scenery and the history, and we love all of that.
That's how you find the neat places, I think.
Oh, it really is. And what's nice about it is that you can't go too far wrong, because the villages are all so close together. But all of that history was absolutely fascinating to me. And then we went to this village, Stow-on-the-Wold, and there's a church there. In fact, I have a picture of this somewhere on my website. I think it's on my blog. And the door of the church is rumored to be the door that inspired Tolkien for the door of Moria.
Right.
And it's this it's got these trees that are like almost growing into the doors, and it's just really beautiful. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is the ground that Tolkien walked on, because he was over in Oxford. I mean, it's just all of that stuff for me is just completely fascinating. And whether it ends up in a book or not, you know, I don't always know, but sometimes it does.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And some of those places you went to, Lower Slaughter, Stow-on-the-Wold, you just mentioned Chipping Norton. I know those so well. So I really appreciate reading, you know, stories that have, when you can tell the author's actually been there and knows what they're talking about.
Oh, it's so great. And in Keeper's Reach, it opens up at a church. And I just think the churchyards there are just so different from what I knew, because, you know, there's these old churches, and they have the headstones, the gravestones, like, in the front yard.
Right.
And I just think
right.
That's so fascinating. And one of the things Joe and I did was we had a lunch. We had to find some place to sit, and here's this bench in this churchyard with all these old stones, and there was a Roman part of the church, and you know, just really an old place. It was out not quite, it was kind of between Stow-on-the-Wold and Chipping Norton, and it was just such a beautiful place, and we sat there on this bench in the shade among the gravestones having lunch. And I thought that's just something that was really different and wonderful for me. And I think it worked its way into my FBI agent, you know, the rogue
right.
FBI agent,
right.
meeting this guy who works for this art thief, and how it all comes together. I mean, I just had, you know, I had a ham sandwich. It was, everything was calm.
And meanwhile, Emma Sharp and Colin Donovan, which two of the FBI's best agents, they're planning a wedding. And so there's all this intrigue going on in amongst all of this beauty of the Cotswolds and the wedding planning and this intrigue and the art thief. It all comes together.
It really does. And it is one of those, I think of Keeper's Reach as having kind of a Sudoku puzzle of a plot. You know, when I was writing, there's just a lot of different parts. And so, you know, when you're writing it, all of a sudden you notice you have two eights and one square and you got to erase and now you got to go back. So it's that kind of story where there's just a lot happening. And so Emma has actually had a quiet couple of months and is trying on her wedding gown when she gets this call from the art thief. And she knows he's the art thief, that her family, she comes from this family of art detectives, and she's an art crimes expert, and she knows he's the art thief. He knows she knows, but but she's trying to be careful because the most important thing right now is to have the art returned, and he's quietly and sneakily returning the art. Plus, there seems to be, you know, the British intelligence wants something from Oliver too. So he's valuable in multiple ways. He's a mythologist. He has this, and he's very cheeky and fun. So he, you know, she's trying on her wedding gown, and he wants to talk to her. And so he says he'll Skype her in. You know, we can do video chats and all this stuff now. And so that's when he's going to send her a package, and her life just something that's supposed to be relatively innocent, even though she's very careful with him, very wary, turns into a real nightmare for her and for Colin because of this package, because of you know, this intelligence analyst Naomi, who, and this rogue FBI agent, and Mike's brother and his friends, these security contractors, and somebody, you know, they had has set their sights on Emma.
Yeah. Well, the RT book reviews top pick. They say Neggers delivers another spellbinding, chilling, complex page turner. Characters will awe readers, and the aha moment is priceless. So I want to talk very quickly. We've only got 2 minutes here, but I saw this on your blog, and I wanted to ask you this because you say there's another character in the book, Sharp and Donovan's stories, not a primary character, but definitely an important one, and that is Father Finian Bracken. And you say creating him has been rewarding for me as a writer. How so?
It's the complexity of Finian Bracken and what he challenges me to do as a writer, to understand him, his world, and how he's ended up in this struggling fishing village in Maine. He's and how he ended up being a priest when he started out opening up a whiskey distillery with his brother in Ireland, and he had a family, he had a wife, he had two small daughters, and they died in a sailing accident. And his journey is just one that is absolutely gripping for me as a writer.
And we're right at the end of our segment, so I think that's a good place to leave. What would you like to leave our listeners with, Carla?
Oh, I just always love talking with you, and best wishes to everyone in Seattle area and wherever they are.
Thank you. And listeners can find out more about Carla Neggers and her work. She is, I think, one of the most prolific authors out there. She said there are more prolific authors, but she certainly is writing a lot, and we're glad about that. You can find out more about her and her work at CarlaNeggers.com, CarlaNeggers.com. And Kirkus Reviews says, Neggers' Sharp and Donovan series has developed a wide following, and her books maintain a potent combination of suspense and romance. Thanks so much for being with us, Carla. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Always great talking with you.
You too. And so that brings us to the end of today's show. Next week is it next week Labor Day? Yes. I don't know where I am this week. I can't believe that August has gone so quickly, but it's next weekend. So we will have a show for you. I won't be here myself, but we'll have a great show lined up for you, ready to go. And so if you have any questions or comments or feedback on today's show, you know where to reach me, info@conversationslive.net. or at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And real quick, the books that I read out at the beginning of the segment, if anybody would like a copy of those, you can give me a call because we're ready to give those away. Just call me at 800-495-7617. You can find us on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and also on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. We will see you after the holiday. Enjoy your holiday, be safe, and hopefully get some downtime. Live well, live strong. This is Vicky St. Clair.
If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Views expressed on the preceding program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. Contests mentioned during this program are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not of the station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KLCK FM 98.9, Digital HD3 Seattle.